Welcome back. It is Farm Talk. I'm Mick Care in the North Dakota Corn Council studio one last time here. And we're heading up to North Dakota State University. I've said this so many times, like, you know, Extension appreciates what I do, but I can't do my show without Extension. And the North Dakota State University Extension Biofuels Economist is Dr. David Ripplinger. He joins us now. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Mick.
Well, RFS, the renewable fuels and the biofuel quotas are, I guess we're getting close to having an announcement, as U.S. President Donald Trump has tentatively approved a plan to try to make farmers happy. Don't know if he's going to make the oil industry happy, but what have you heard about some getting back to 15 billion gallons for the RFS?
Well, and actually beyond 15 billion gallons to clean up some of the excess RINs that are out there. Basically, it looks like things are kind of solidifying in terms of the administration's plan. They floated a few ideas, which were generally not well received by farmers in the ethanol lobby. And now what we're expecting is something a little bit more aggressive, which would include adding a billion gallons of biofuels to the mandate annually, as well as bringing those waived gallons back into the mix using a three-year average.
So what does, well, okay, that's a lot of math there.
It is.
So are we going to get back to 15? Because we've had a lot of exemptions for a lot of people who may not necessarily have needed them.
We sure have, and maybe we can save the should they have got them for another day. That's a story in and of itself. But yeah, I mean, basically what we have now is a corn ethanol industry that is not seeing policy enforced as it was expected. And so we have a lot of idle plants, which is not good. And over the last 2 years, we've seen a lot of lower domestic use of fuel. And it's done two things. One is that's obviously hurt the corn ethanol industry and corn farmers with less demand, but it's also really hurt because a lot of the RINs, the renewable identification numbers, have kind of pooled up. And so you kind of have to address both of those things. And I think that President Trump did about as well as he could. And there's no doubt in my mind that the petroleum industry is not happy with him. I guess that's the trade-off you have to make. But right now, you know, what they're trying to do is to increase the mandate and to hopefully burn through those excess RINs to get those committed and eventually get the RFS back on track. But that'll take a couple of years to get there.
Yeah, because all of these waivers, the RINs and the biofuel mandate, it seems like it's always for like the year before last is what we're always talking about when they announce something for this year.
Yeah, no, it became a mess. And, I mean, that started, you know, in the Obama administration where the EPA simply didn't stay on schedule in terms of announcing obligations for the next year. And that really, the industry didn't like that. The corn ethanol industry didn't like that. The biofuels industry didn't like that. But it really came to a head with the small refinery waivers because those refinery waivers were made after those obligations were made. So it ended up being a retroactive reduction. And that really jostled the market, continues to hurt the market. And so right now where we are is, you know, idle capacity, you know, relatively low ethanol prices, lower corn prices than we'd expect. And this is how the administration is going to deal with it.
Now, the president has inserted himself, according to the news articles here, that into negotiations between the oil industry and corn industry. But this is really kind of a White House meeting, isn't it? And Trump, President Trump is trying to make everybody happy politically, realizing that he has got more to lose with the farming, you know, with the red states in the Midwest who helped get him elected. And I don't know, what has he got to lose with the oil industry?
Well, actually quite a bit. And I'm not a political science major. And usually when I talk about politics, I get myself in trouble.
And me too. You know, that's why we don't talk politics on this show. So.
Yep. The biggest challenge with the petroleum industry, API, is they're very well-financed, and they're not going to be happy with this. And so while this will benefit, like you said, Midwestern states, Corn Belt states, the ag economy generally, which the administration needs help with, on the API side, on the petroleum side, they're upset, and what you're going to see, and I'm glad I don't live in Iowa anymore, is you're going to see an absolute bombardment of TV and radio advertisements about the Trump administration not not being a friend of energy generally. So, you know, that's going to be coming around as soon as this starts to solidify more. And they have a lot of power. They have a lot of money. And so if you're in the radio business, if you're in the media business, you'll probably be really happy because there'll be an increased advertising revenue. But, you know, that they're going to bombard everybody and probably not be able to sway the opinions and thoughts of the farm block, not be able to swing the opinion of rural folks. But it's the folks on Main Street and the bigger cities throughout the Midwest, which there's quite a few of, who will see those ads and wonder what's going on.
Yeah. Well, there are at those meetings at the White House, I know there are a couple of oil companies like Marathon and Valero who are basically very ethanol-friendly. So they should have some reasonable common sense when it comes to having a plan to move forward, because they balance oil and ethanol quite well, don't they?
Or so we thought. Mm-hmm. There was a letter that they both signed a few weeks ago bringing up that issue, that they both have ethanol interests, that they are among the larger refiners, that they do have the ability to cover their obligations under the RFS. At the same time, they basically said, we don't want you to address this issue. We think that the administration has been right the last 2 years, and just to keep going with the plan. And that obviously, you know, didn't resonate much with the administration, again, because they came back kind of adding some more chips are a little bit more to one side of the balance to help help sway the farm block.
Now, another component in this, another factor in all the complicated math, is are the RINs and the credits that companies can buy to get around blending higher ethanol blends in there. So is that a factor here moving forward?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, as I mentioned, we've been pooling a few RINs, again, because the actual mandated levels was lower. And so that led to kind of, you know, oversupply, lower prices. And now we're expecting to see higher use. And so the price of RINs has gone up somewhat. The price of publicly traded ethanol companies has gone up, in some cases, quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going forward, we would expect that those situations to hold. That does bring up one of the complaints of the petroleum industry, is that the price of RINs gets too high and it ends up becoming cumbersome to do business, which is true. I mean, when the policy binds, it does force people to do things they wouldn't want to do otherwise. But that was how the policy was originally designed.
Well, Dave, is this going to be resolved? Do you see this as a resolvable issue?
I think it is. I'm actually shocked. I thought that with the EPA under Administrator Pruitt, that the administration had kind of got itself into a corner. And I am surprised that the administration came back once and then twice again when the first deal wasn't good enough to help address this issue. You know, if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have thought that the situation would have continued through 2020 and it would have adversely affected re-election chances for the administration. And now I'm surprised. The one thing to step back and is the idea that it's going to take time to get the entire corn ethanol industry back on track, to burn through those excess RINs, to get the policy to actually enforce, and, you know, getting our use above that 10% blend wall.
All right. Well, I know there's a corn ethanol plant down in South Dakota that's shut down. There's some other North Dakota ethanol plants are negatively affected by all of this. So let's keep our fingers crossed, Dave.
Absolutely.
All righty. Okay. Well, I'm hoping that we'd have, we only got about a minute and a half to talk about hemp, because it's a bioeconomic boost to North Dakota. Where are we at from your perspective, Dave, with the hemp industry in North Dakota?
Well, I think that there's a lot of interest and excitement breaking it up into three components on the food side, the fiber side, and especially the CBD side. There's a lot of activity. There's acres in production this year. There's processors who are in operation and looking to grow. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity that exists and a lot of educational opportunities for those of us at Extension.
Do you see processing as the big holdup as far as make sure this thing doesn't become another Jerusalem artichoke?
Well, absolutely. I mean, anytime you're going to get into supplying a product, it's really good to do your research and see that demand is actually there. Jerusalem artichoke, it had a number of potential uses, but no real markets for any of those. Mm-hmm. Hemp has existing markets on the food side, on the fiber side, although it's really not built up at all in this country. And on the CBD side, there are markets. They're still relatively small, but the amount of money rolling around there is considerable.
All right. Well, there's another thing that you're keeping tabs on. Thank you very much, NDSU's David Ripplinger, who is the state's bioenergy and bioproducts economist, of which, of course, hemp is one. So thanks, Dave.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mick.
You're very welcome.